Hello, I'm Liz Landford, arts correspondent at ArtSound FM, and I'm so pleased to welcome the fantastic Sophie Edwards.
Thanks for having me.
Sophie is a musician, songwriter, and producer who was chosen by Triple J to be the unearthed act to perform at iconic Australian music festival Spilt Milk a month after she opened Stonefest. Sophie's work championing non-male creatives in the music scene led her to be a nominee for Young Australian of the Year for 2024. Welcome, Sophie.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
So what I thought I'd start with is, at the beginning, what drew you to work in the music industry and how did you get your start?
Yeah, sure. Music was always just kind of an after-school hobby for me growing up. I really loved to sing, and I was definitely encouraged by my family to keep performing, and being creative was always really important to me. But when I was in year 11 and 12, I was studying a lot of other harder subjects like maths and things like that that I really enjoyed, and I thought that I would go into something a bit more serious academic international relations type business. And then one of my teachers at school encouraged me to drop all of that and just do music because she thought it was pretty clear that I was going to be doing music for the rest of my life and I should focus on that instead. And I started gigging when I was about 15, so I was kind of already making money from music, and it just was kind of always going to be my thing, which I'm really grateful for, that I didn't have to make a really tricky decision or anything. Yes. At any point.
In which order did things sort of come for you? Were you singing initially, playing instruments, your songwriting and your music production, so many different strings to that bow? Which sort of order did they naturally fall in for you?
Yeah, well, I was always singing. And I grew up singing. And then when I was in year 11 and 12, I was also at the ANU H course program, which is like an extra program that counted towards my year 11 and 12, where I could study kind of higher level music. And that's where I started learning jazz music. And I didn't really know anything about jazz going in, but I just knew that I wasn't keen on classical, and that was the only other option. And I studied jazz, and then from there I was kind of encouraged to do a jazz degree. So I did jazz vocals, and through that I was kind of learning piano as I went. And I feel like you need to have a basic level of understanding of piano to be able to understand all of the theory concepts that we were learning at university all the time. And then I kind of worked out that I didn't necessarily love jazz. It was that I loved improvising and I loved making things up. And so I started writing my own music instead. And that just kind of developed into producing the music and playing all of the instruments myself and developing the art that I'm making at the moment.
Do you have a particular songwriting process that you tend to sort of follow, or is it?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it changes a lot depending on the situation and what I'm writing about. I think sometimes songs just fall out when I experience something. But I've taught songwriting a few times now, and I kind of have had to work out what my internal process is when I'm writing a song and explain that to people. And I feel like the method for me, the chords and the melody and the lyrics kind of come at a similar time, but all of the sections of each song are a reaction to the section before it. So if we're sad in the verse, then the chorus has to be a reaction to that. So whether it's shifting the gear of the song to be something more positive and hopeful, or whether we're going to continue to wallow in the sad stuff, I kind of make a decision at the end of each section of the song to give it a bit more direction.
Do you remember what the first album that you ever purchased was? And do you have a favourite album currently?
Yeah, I'm not sure what my first album I purchased was. I know that the first CD I had was, I won it at my school disco. I won an Avril Lavigne CD, and then I was obsessed with her. And I used to listen to it like crazy, and I was so excited to have my own CD. At the moment, I have a few favorite albums. Sorry, I'm just checking my phone to see what the best albums are.
Brilliant.
I have a few that I always go back to. One Australian artist that I really love, her name's Merpire. She's in Melbourne. And she just seems to write these lyrics that are just so cleverly crafted to exactly what I'm feeling all the time. And she came and supported James Bay at the Canberra Theatre recently. And she didn't know who I was or anything, but I messaged her and I was like, this is crazy that you're coming to Canberra because I'm a little bit obsessed with you. And I know that this is weird because you're like just like a similar level of artist to me, blah, 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 blah. And then, yeah, she invited me to the concert, invited me backstage. We hung out the whole time and she's just like the loveliest person and writes music that really strikes a chord with me. So, yeah, I'd say her album is one that I always go back to, which is cool.
Fantastic. What a great opportunity.
Yeah, so much fun. I love the internet. That's just what happens sometimes.
Another thing that I thought would be great to pick your brain on, Sophie, is your thoughts on the accessibility of music online. Platforms and the way that musicians are able to share their music globally.
I think there's obviously a lot of pros and cons that comes with the current landscape of music. It's a lot more simple for me to share my music with a wider variety of people, but it's also really difficult for me to make an impact on apps like Spotify because they only prioritize artists that other bigger businesses and stakeholders tell them to prioritize. So a lot of independent artists are hardly getting any attention from Spotify, and even if you follow these independent artists on Spotify, they're still not recommending their music, and it's really hard to get people to notice your work on there. We also aren't paid very much per stream, so it definitely costs more to have a song on, for me at least, it costs more for me to have a song on a streaming platform than I actually gain from it often. But it is a great way for me to be able to share my music more widely. And often when I'm added to other people's playlists and things, that's what I get the most excited about because I can see how I fit in with other people's music tastes and where I sit in the wider music scene in Australia as well, which is, it's definitely valuable information and it's really nice to see. But yeah, we struggle with it a lot, I would say.
Yes, and music videos. Do you find that that also is a really useful tool with promotion?
Yeah, I think it definitely makes your song look a little more serious than it is if you've got a video that goes with it. But again, I think it's an expensive process and it's up to whether you think there's something that would match really nicely. But yeah, I did a music video for one of my recent releases and I kind of wanted to do it because the song was quite dark and quite serious and I wanted there to be a video accompanying it that kind of matched this dark and serious tone but also made it a little bit lighter. So the song was all about like anxiety and some things that I'd been feeling, but then the video was all about like this monster that was kind of chasing me around and it was like a silly looking monster, but at the same time it matches the actual song. Yeah, so I think it's a great way of putting the listener in a visual world and understanding some of my stories a little clearer.
Anyone who was looking to get their music online, what would be some of the tips that you would have for them with the actual process that you had to go through to get yours online?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for just sharing snippets and things on social media, if you're comfortable with that. And I think it's also really important to just not worry about what the reception is, because you never know whether... So often social media websites don't promote particular videos and there's no rhyme or reason why. So just because a song isn't doing as well as you think it should be, it isn't because it's a bad song 90% of the time. And I just have to keep reminding myself that. But yeah, I think just sharing it with your friends and encouraging people to listen. This year, I'm really trying to actively tell people that the songs are good and that they should listen to it and they should come to my shows because I feel like I've always been like, oh, you don't have to come, don't worry about it, which is stupid. So yeah,
they're coming.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I hope you can come. Yeah.
And I suppose it's the full package, right, of having live performances as well as those online platforms that you've got going. What are some of the things, again, that you'd sort of suggest to people who are looking to do that whole package of online live performances as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot of work, but it's definitely worth it for me. I kind of always grew up playing live, so I think my whole journey has kind of been rooted in playing live and playing with different iterations of my band. But yeah, I think someone told me recently, because I was kind of talking about how I felt like I have a really great live show, but it just doesn't translate online sometimes and people don't notice me online and blah, blah, blah. And that person was like, well, why do you care? Why don't you just focus on having a great live show? Because that's what you like doing and that's what you care about the most. And yeah, so I would say the same thing to everyone. Focus on the things that bring you the most joy and make you want to keep creating, because if you just focus on things that you're not inspired by or you don't feel comfortable doing, then you're not going to keep making music.
Some of your experiences like Stonefest, Spilt Milk, that must have just been extraordinary from a live performance perspective, a real mecca.
I definitely, I wasn't prepared for, well, I mean, I was prepared for it in the way that I've grown up singing all my life, but when I got the, I had my performance for Stonefest straight after moving back from overseas, and it was kind of the first gig that my band and I played together, and then the second gig was Spilt Milk. And so we were really kind of overwhelmed and excited, and all three of us had played a lot with us. We'd played our own music and our other people's music, but yeah, we hadn't really played at that scale with each other before. But it was incredible, and I think it's a roller coaster. Sometimes there is those really big gigs and sometimes you're playing to no one, so you just kind of have to roll with it and see what happens.
And your backstage preparation, yourself and your band as well, were there particular things that you all did to sort of get in the zone before that performance?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the three of us are just, we're all really close friends now as well, and so often I'll have a bigger show, and even if it doesn't necessarily need a band, I'll bring them just because I know that having them around makes me feel a lot more comfortable. And yeah, so I think just being in each other's presence is preparation enough. Catherine and Olivia, who are my band, are both super good at what they do, in the way that we have one or two rehearsals before a gig and they just remember everything and they know everything, and I feel super confident in their abilities. And then I think they're confident in the way that I lead, because I don't overwork them and I don't ask too much of them, and I'm not hounding them for rehearsals or making them practice or anything, because I know that they can do a good job. And that's why they're there.
And how did you meet?
Yeah, well, Liv, Olivia's been playing with me for years and years. She went to uni with me. And then Catherine, I think she remembers how we met, but I don't really remember. But I remember, I think I saw her play with another, like, rock band at a gig somewhere in Canberra when I was maybe 18. And I just admired her ever since. And I was, like, following her on Instagram. And while I was overseas studying, I was thinking about this band that I was going to put back together when I moved home. And I was like, I really want to see if I can get Catherine in the band and have, like, a really cool girl band that is just playing all of my music and doing a really good job at it. And so I messaged her before I moved back, and I was like, hey, I'm starting to get a few little gigs coming up. I'd really love for you to play them. And she was on board, and it's been great.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And it's such a supportive and close-knit local music scene in many ways, I find, as well. A lot of people did study together or have known each other for years.
I think Liv plays in, like, six bands at this point. She's crazy. Yes. She plays bass.
Are there particular musicians that inspire you?
I think there's definitely musicians that I feel like inspire my sound, and there's lots of different people that inspire different things for me. So there's one songwriter that I really love. Her name's Lennon Stella, and she is a singer-songwriter, and she kind of grew up with country music, and her little sister played a lot of country music. And then when she hit her early 20s, she decided she wanted to be a pop singer, but she still got all of these country tendencies in the way that she tells a story through this pop music, and it's a little bit deeper than your usual pop music, but then it's got this really exciting production around it because, she wanted this kind of level of electronic music as well. So I really love her, and I love the way that she sings words, rather than just, every word kind of has a little bit more meaning in the way that she presents them rather than just saying them. I think I've worked around a lot of really inspiring people, especially in the production world. There's a lot of non-male producers that have really encouraged me to keep doing what I'm doing, and I think they're the ones who inspire me the most.
And some of the performances and concerts that you've put on as well in Canberra, I'd love to hear a bit more about how they came about and some of your She's on the Bill work and that sort of thing as well.
Yeah, sure. I think it was 2019 or 2020, some of my friends and I that also work in the Canberra music scene, less as musicians but more on the technical side of things, we all kind of were struggling to be taken seriously in the Canberra music scene, and we felt as though we weren't getting the good gigs, even though we'd been working for a really long time, and there was all of these boy bands that would just immediately skyrocket past what I'd been working towards for years and years, and we couldn't really understand why. And I had an experience where I wasn't really taken seriously, and the person who wasn't taking me seriously just flat out told me that he couldn't see me in a serious light. So we kind of decided to combine our skills and try and put on a really, really good show that sells a lot of tickets, has a lot of amazing people in the lineup, and it's run completely by us, and it's kind of just showing what we are capable of, so that people would take us a little more seriously. And then that developed into doing that almost every month for a while. And it was all out of my own pocket, and we would pay all of the artists appropriately, and we would sell tickets and work really, really hard. And we just kept working at it for a really long time, and then I moved overseas, and we're just kind of starting to piece it all back together now that I'm back.
And a lot of the work that you do, Sophie, as well, which is just so incredible with young musicians and young artists coming through. Do you want to talk us through a bit of what you're doing in that space as well?
Yeah, well, I feel like when I first started gigging, I was 15, and my dad used to play covers gigs with his band, and so he knew a little bit about what I should be doing and how much I should be charging and how I should be treated, but we didn't really know anything about the original music scene in Canberra or how I should be feeling after a gig or anything like that. And I've kind of, especially on the internet, I try and seem really approachable so that if people do have questions or they are having their first gig and they just want to make sure that they're not being taken for a ride or they're feeling a bit nervous about it, that they can talk to me about it. And I just kind of coached them through it a little bit. I worked a lot with youth in general in music, and I've been a teacher at a lot of different places, and I really want to make sure that people still want to make music, even though the music scene's pretty grim a lot of the time.
It is a really challenging industry, and to your credit, some of the extraordinary experiences that you've had must just be so incredibly satisfying given that landscape.
I think before She's on the Bill, I was really competitive with everyone that I saw succeeding on the internet, but now I can see that a win for someone in Canberra is a win for Canberra, and a win for someone who is just coming up is really good because it means that there's even more opportunities that are going to develop.
Are there particular collaboration and mentoring opportunities that really stand out for you as things that you particularly enjoyed?
Yeah. While I was overseas, I worked with the bass player for Nile Rodgers and Chic. His name's Jerry Barnes. And I was he kind of wanted an intern, but he didn't really know what it was going to be about yet. And when I went to his studio to meet with him for the first time, he was talking about how he had a sister who passed away recently, but she had also had this amazing music career and produced music and wrote music for Saturday Night Live and all of these amazing people. And she won an Emmy and she'd done all of these amazing things. And they had hundreds and hundreds of floppy disks with songs that she'd made on them, but had never been finished or released. And so we kind of just started going through them all and working out which ones were the best ones and which ones we should bring people in to finish, and started kind of telling her story a little bit more, because I think she was kind of always behind the scenes, and Jerry made so much amazing music with her that he wanted to share. So that was really cool, because I got to learn a lot more about some older music production techniques, because it was all from the 70s, 80s, 90s. And he'd be like, oh, we recorded this in my apartment on a toaster and it was fine. And here's Chaka Khan and like all this crazy stuff. And he would tell me all these crazy stories about people that he played with all the time. And yeah, it was really cool to just be in the room with that type of person. And then I think out of our relationship, he would just appreciate my kind of younger perspective on the world. And sometimes he wouldn't understand things in the media, and I would just explain to him what was going on, and then he could form his own views about it. But yeah.
Such an interesting time. That whole experience overseas sounds mm-hmm. like it was really fascinating.
Yeah, it was pretty full on. I was studying a master's degree. And usually master's degrees should take longer than a year, but this one was really condensed, and so we would spend a really long time at school every day. But I wouldn't change it. It was so much fun.
Well, it sounds like that was an incredible mentorship experience, but also a great collaboration both ways. Are there other mentors that really stand out for you?
I think I've had a number of people in Australia just who I think there's a lot of initiatives to have more women in music and have more support for women in music. And often I'll do a workshop or a one-day thing with someone and they'll stay connected with me through all of the other things that happen. So I had this one producer, her name is Anna Laverty, and I met her when I was about 17 and I just started writing songs, and she was just kind of like, hey, this is a job that you could do if you keep doing it. And I didn't really know that songwriting was a job. But, she just encouraged me to keep doing it. And then a few months later, I saw her at another event. And I was like, hey, it's me from the event a few months ago. She's like, oh, cool, awesome. And then I saw her at another thing, at an engineering thing. And suddenly she kind of saw that I was doing engineering stuff as well. And, now I'm really lucky to... She runs the Music Producers and Engineers Guild, and she's included me in that guild, which is really beautiful because a lot of the people in that guild are a lot more experienced than I am. But I'm really grateful for her support as well.
I mean, there have been a few pinch me moments, Sophie, by the sounds of things, but
yes,
I understand that you had a particularly great run, one of those kind of, you know, incredible luck being the result of decades of hard work and training and performances. But can you walk us through that pinch me moment? I'm thinking Young Australian of the Year nomination, that kind of time.
There was kind of a month where a lot of amazing things happened in my career, which was last October. And so we started the month by playing Stonefest, which was so much fun. And it was kind of my first gig back in, I guess I had like a solo gig back when I'd moved back to Australia, but this was my first band gig back, and it was a bigger stage than I usually played on. And I was just really excited to play all of the new songs that I'd made. And then, that month I also got the call that I was nominated for Australian of the Year, and I was super overwhelmed and excited. And I think I told them, I was like, I wasn't living here though. How am I nominated? I haven't been here in a year. She's like, oh, well, it's more than that. Like, you do a lot of stuff. And I was like, okay, cool. And then I won a grant, and I also won the Spilt Milk competition in October as well. And it just seemed like so many things all at the same time that we were like jamming into my schedule that I was so excited about. But yeah, I was definitely running off adrenaline for a month. And yeah, it's been really amazing to think about. And I like to put everything in my calendar on my phone, and that month just looks a little crazy. So there's a number of awards and things that happen in Canberra that I think then put you up for Australian of the Year. And so I think that that's how it kind of happened. But I got a phone call. Actually, I think I got an email a while ago saying that I was nominated by someone for Australian of the Year, and that I needed to provide some references that they could call and make sure that I was an okay person. So I provided the references, didn't really think anything of it. And then, yeah, I was on a run and I got a phone call, and they were like, yeah, you're up for it. You're one of the four finalists for the ACT. So then there was an event at the National Gallery where all of the finalists for the ACT went, and we all got to meet each other. And we had a couple of other meetings with the team in charge of the Australian of the Year. But they were kind of like over Zoom. So it was really strange that it was just like all of these really important, influential people just on a Zoom call. I think everyone was just kind of feeling a lot of imposter syndrome, but it was really, really lovely to meet everyone. And I still stay in contact with Caitlin, who is the person who won Young Australian of the Year for the ACT. And yeah, I think, it definitely just put me in connection with a lot more people outside of the music industry. And I think that's kind of been a good thing for the Canberra music scene, because it means that I have a few more connections that might actually be able to help us if we need it, or show that it's a bit more important than just like a little hobby for a lot of people.
And I think one of the great things about your experience is that it is just so multifaceted, with the, you know, producing of music and all of those different aspects. Did the producing of music, did that end up being something that's actually been a real passion for you as well? And did that surprise you, or was it just a really natural flow into that area?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it was necessarily a natural flow, because I feel like most of the time people that sing and songwrite, they do that and then they hire a producer to help them finish the song. And I was doing that for a while, and I was kind of watching these producers, and I was really interested, and I would go home after the session and then kind of redo exactly what they did and be like, oh, so that's how they did that. And I kind of got to a point where I think it must have been during COVID, where I was writing a lot because I had a lot of spare time, and I was like, maybe I'll just start recording them in to my computer and making them into something. And then my first song that I produced and released did really well for me. And I think the total cost of the song to create it was like $80. So I was kind of like, why would I do anything else? And I feel like maybe I should just learn a bit more and have a bit more official education about this, so that I feel confident in my abilities and I keep doing this. And then, so I applied for a few different programs, and out of nowhere, I was kind of like, oh, maybe I'll just apply for this Berklee program in New York, even though it's a big long shot and I probably won't get in. And there was a bunch of rounds of interviews and things, and then I got in. And so suddenly I kind of had to switch everything again and move over there. But I wouldn't change it. And I'm now production is such an important part of my music. And I feel like because I approach it from a songwriter's perspective, I try and make all of the sounds match the theme of the song, rather than just making a standard pop song. I focus on trying to tell a bit more of a story that the lyrics are already telling as well.
How do you think that those overseas global experiences have inspired and influenced your music?
Yeah, I think when I moved overseas, I definitely had a lot more of an open mind, and I had a lot of experiences that I wouldn't have had in Canberra that led me to write a lot of songs. I also had a lot of experiences where I was super lonely and I was super far away. So there's a lot of sad songs, unfortunately, from that period of time. But yeah, I think I'm putting out an EP soon, and it's called Transience, and it's all about how everything in the past few years for me has felt really fleeting, but sometimes that's a good thing, in the way that we don't have to put too much pressure on relationships or friendships, because you never know where you're going to be living in a year. And but then at the same time, the ones that are sticking around, even though you live on the other side of the planet, are the ones that become more sentimental and important in your life. So yeah, and I think I wouldn't have realized that unless I moved away and had some distance from the Canberra scene. The people that check in all the time and the people that I still talk to every day from both New York and Canberra are the ones that I'm writing about now, I'd say.
Mm. Mm. And especially the fact that you've studied in both countries, that, yeah, must be just incredibly useful to have had that lens as well.
Yeah, they're very different schools, the ANU and Berkeley. I'd say ANU is really about high-quality performance and being the best musician you can be, and Berkeley was also about that, but I'd say they're more business-minded, and they're all about marketing yourself and trying to get people jobs outside of the degree, which I think both of them have their merits and their downfalls as well. But yeah, I think the combination of both has made me a little more well-rounded.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other area that I find just incredibly interesting is that whole sort of backstage, all the work that needs to go in to get to that polished performance or that polished EP.
Mm-hmm.
So keen to sort of hear that a bit more from you on some of your key kind of backstage preparation sort of routines, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm trying to be a little bit better about that, because I tend to overbook myself a little bit and hurry myself on stage. And I think that that's not the most sustainable thing. But I'd say if we're talking about a gig, then there's regular rehearsal in the lead up to performance, and we just make sure that we're all feeling really confident and happy about the songs. Because I've been performing them for a while now, it's kind of second nature, but I think there's always things, every audience is different and can kind of trigger different reactions in me as well. So I've just got to stay super focused and sing my little songs. But when it comes to production or recording, I think if I'm producing for myself, I just the room has to be like really clean, and I have to be really excited to produce and excited to make something, which happens most of the time, which is good. And then if I'm writing with other people, usually I have like up to an hour of just chatting with them before I even start making music, because I really like them to know that I'm their friend first and then a producer, and I just want to make something that's really authentic to them and not just something that we never think about ever again. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And just enjoying that whole journey and the whole process.
Yeah, well, songwriting can be super vulnerable, so
yeah.
I think it's important for them to see me as a friend as well. When they're sharing their deepest, darkest secrets with everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that one of the things that you're rightfully really proud of is that you've managed to forge a career entirely working in the music industry.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, I think it's been, I do lots of little jobs, so I think my wider skill set means that I've kind of only ever really worked in music, but yeah, there's been a lot of teaching, and there's been a lot of audio engineering and things on the side that I just like to do things that I'm excited to do and that I'm passionate about. So yeah, I'm lucky that in Canberra, I think there's a lot of creative people that need someone in the room to help them, and a lot of the time I can be that person.
And Sophie, what are your favourite things about being involved in the music industry? What are some of the things that just, you know, light you up about doing this kind of work?
I think for me, because I've kind of been in the music industry since I was 15. That's a lot of my formative years, and I feel like whenever I go to a gig, there's like 10 people who just want to say hello and want to chat, and they're so lovely, and I think it'd be really hard for me to find that sort of community anywhere else. And yeah, I think it's so cool that I could just go to most venues in Canberra and walk in and have a friend there if I needed one or if I wanted one. And I'm not really scared of going to gigs alone anymore, because I'm like, there'll probably be someone, and if there's not, then there'll be someone else that is also there alone and wants a friend. So yeah, I think that's the best part about it. It's just the community that I'm now a part of.
What are some of the key challenges while you're doing something that you absolutely love doing?
Yeah, I think the challenges for me are definitely, I think there's not enough hours in the day to do all the things that I want to do, and that can be challenging sometimes, but at the moment it's definitely just still engaging with my audience and ensuring that they come to shows and they come and support, because things are a little expensive these days, and it's really hard for me to, I feel like sometimes I have to convince people to come, which is really hard for my mental health, I'd say, to convince people that I am a good musician and they should come and spend money on that is, a horrible thing to have to do, because I wish people would just come. But, yeah, I think the pros are still outweighing the challenges for me, and I can't see myself doing anything else. So, yeah.
Yeah, and look, it's such an inspiration for anyone wanting to get into the music industry as well, to see someone who's making it work and doing all of those different things that you do, but still within music.
Yeah, thank you.
What changes would you like to see in the music industry, particularly around representation, diversity, and accessibility? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was a thing that APRA MCOS just posted today, which is they're kind of the governing body for musicians in Australia, and they're in charge of finding a lot of the money that we're owed from radio and from all sorts of things and making sure that it gets to musicians. They have basically put forward something that encourages all of the international touring acts that they have to have an Australian artist on the bill supporting them, especially for people like Taylor Swift and these huge artists that have a huge following. There's no reason why they couldn't open with an Australian act or have more Australian people on the staff. So, yeah, I think that it's also just coming from the legacy of Michael Gudinski, who was a really big advocate for that through Mushroom Publishing and the record label that he made. So I hope that that is put into some more legislation or something a little more serious than an Instagram post, but yeah, you never know. That would be really cool. In general, though, I think representation in Canberra is doing pretty well, and everyone's, at least from what I can see, everyone's feeling pretty supported. It's just that there's not enough gigs and there's not enough venues, and nobody has enough money to put shows on. So the shows are pretty 50-50 in terms of, well, I wouldn't say 50-50, but the shows have more, the shows put more importance on equality and having a diverse lineup, but there just isn't enough shows to showcase all of the musicians that are in Canberra, which is a shame.
What advice do you have, or have you been given, that you can share with us, particularly for people who are studying or working in the music industry or keen to just get involved?
Yeah, I think it's usually never the music is the reason why things aren't working. It's usually just things outside of your control, or somebody knows someone, or it's just important to never put blame on the creative part of this job, because I think if that happens, then you're not going to continue creating. You just have to trust that you're a good musician, and if it's meant for you, it'll reach you. And yeah, I think that's kind of how I stay grounded and how I keep creating things, is only chasing the things that are meant for me. And yeah, that's my piece of advice, I'd say.
What's next for you? You mentioned your new album. So exciting. How can people support you and what's coming up?
Yeah, I've got a performance in 2 weeks at the Polo. So I'm kind of going to be showing this new EP that I've been working on, and it's going to be a headline show. So I've got my full band. And then a couple of other artists are also doing some really amazing things in that show. So our opening act is Jet Blatton, who he's a really cool pop musician that is still in high school, amazingly, but is already getting played on Unearthed and is already making really high quality music, but has never actually played live because I feel like this new generation of musicians are all on the internet, which is really cool. But he's trying to translate that to a live show now. And this is going to be his premiere show, his debut. And then Gia, who is our middle act, is releasing a single, I think, the day before that show. So it's going to be her single launch, his debut show, and my kind of celebration of finishing this EP. I don't think the EP will be out in time, but at least I'll be able to show you what it has on it.
So exciting.
Yeah.
And your own Unearthed experience, are you swapping notes? And how was that for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think Jet and I get along really well, and I kind of help him with his live show stuff. And I think, we just kind of work together and are a little bit tactical, but at the same time, we're just supportive and excited about anything that comes our way. And I feel like because I'm excited about everyone else in the music industry, they're generally excited for me when great things happen or when someone takes notice. It's great.
So exciting. Thank you, Sophie Edwards, for joining me in the Art Sound Studios to provide such useful insights into your career and experiences in the music industry. We're so grateful that you came in. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.